This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. This week, we're taking a peek at government spending. And we're wondering, is DOGE DOA? If we had a magic eight ball, all signs would point to no. Sure, Elon Musk might be gone from the halls of the White House, but the legacy of what he and President Donald Trump began crafting together, namely the slicing and dicing of government under the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, that continues. In just the last few days, the Supreme Court ruled that the president can legally continue his mission to dismantle the Department of Education in the interim of a larger case being decided. And in related news, the State Department is firing more than 1,300 career diplomats and civil servants in line with the president's plans. And these cuts are coming as questions are at the forefront about catastrophic flooding in Texas that's claimed more than 100 lives. People are wondering whether cuts at FEMA and the National Weather Service played a role in this loss of life. It's worth noting that these issues are cropping up as the Atlantic hurricane season shapes up in the Gulf. If this storm gets a more defined center of circulation, it will get the ominous name Dexter. It would also become the fourth named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season. That's a mark that we typically don't reach until mid-August, not mid-July. Dexter would bring more flooding possibilities to Florida and Louisiana. And as we noted, it comes right on the heels of that disaster in Texas. So let's start off the show today in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. There, KRLD is reporting on the situation and how officials seemingly missed the giant warning signs hanging over young girls who tragically died at Camp Mystic.
Newly released records show state inspectors signed off on Camp Mystic's emergency planning just 2 days before the flood hit and left at least 27 girls and counselors dead.
The records released to the AP show the camp complied with a host of state regulations, including teaching campers what to do if they have to evacuate and assigning specific tasks to each staffer. The inspection found no deficiencies or violations. The camp had 557 campers and more than 100 staffers between its Guadalupe and Cypress Lake locations when the flood hit. The National Weather Service issued a flood watch for the area July 3rd at 1:18 p.m. At least one of the 18-some camps along the Guadalupe move kids to higher ground. From KRLD,
Lieutenant Colonel Ben Baker with the Texas Game Wardens say they have more than 300 game wardens currently working in the search and rescue effort.
We've searched 26 river miles since this tragic event has started. We've had approximately 444 rescues, 30 recoveries.
He says they also have two helicopter crews working, as well as 12 drone teams. A handful of canine units are also involved in the effort.
Official questions about the line when it comes to evacuations ahead of catastrophic flooding. The resounding message from Texas leaders is now is not the time.
Senator John Cornyn says people who are using the tragedy for political purposes should be ashamed of themselves. He says, though, there will likely at some point be inquiries, as there should be.
Thankfully, from President Trump on down, we're seeing an unprecedented effort of providing the resources to do this recovery effort.
Cornyn says he has friends whose children survived and are now dealing with the trauma following their rescue.
So, what's the latest with the president and FEMA, the disaster support arm of the government that he vowed at one point to abolish. Now, after repeatedly musing about getting rid of the agency, the Trump administration has shifted away from its harsh rhetoric. That's according to NBC News. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said Saturday that President Donald Trump actually wants the Federal Emergency Management Agency remade rather than dismantled entirely. For more, here's Professor Jim Elliott. He's co-director of the Center for Coastal Futures and Adaptive Resilience at Rice University.
So, phasing out FEMA, what effects would that have?
Oh, they would be beyond anything I think we can imagine at this point. I think when I talk to my colleagues about the announcements on this front, we're still in that early phase of just trying to wonder what it is that's actually going to happen, right? Is this a trial balloon or is this actually going to happen? And then if it does happen, realizing that FEMA is not one thing. FEMA is an umbrella agency that does many different things and has many different programs, from individual assistance to public assistance that rebuilds things after things are damaged, after a fire or a storm or flood or whatnot, to more proactive planning and adaptation, and including overseeing the National Flood Insurance Program. So when someone says, like President Trump, that they're going to phase out FEMA, obviously the devil is going to be in the details. And at this point, we're just all wondering what that's going to look like.
So let's talk a little bit about how FEMA coordinates with state, local, tribal governments during a disaster. What are key points of collaboration?
Yeah, well, I mean, the idea is that disasters are sort of defined as such by the fact that it overwhelms local capacity, right? So the basic framework is that if you have a city or a town that says, hey, you know, we can't properly recover or repair from this recent event, we need help, they reach up to the state, and the state makes some calculations and assessments and then reaches up to the federal government. And usually the bigger the impacts, oftentimes economic impacts, destruction of hard infrastructure, the more likely it is to go up that chain of command. But there's also a bit of loss of control as locals ask the state officials to step in. They relinquish some control, just as state officials, when they reach up to the feds, also relinquish control. So there's some give and take in that. But what the federal agencies do is provide the expertise and, frankly, the experience. You know, they're paid professionals to step into a lot of counties and cities that are, frankly, at a point where they don't have the budgets to maintain large staffs of people just in case something happens. Right. So the feds are really a critical piece of just trying to figure out how to coordinate what needs to be done and how that's going to happen, because they're the team with the experience.
But the rhetoric coming out of the White House says that they're going to try to transfer as much of that as they can to the states. Are the states actually in a position to be able to handle what you were just talking about?
Yeah, the forecasts are no, absolutely not. It'll depend on which state you're in, and that's a combination of what threats are sort of opposed and how regularly they occur. So, for instance, here in Texas, at Rice and in Houston, we get, you know, seemingly 100-year floods every 2 to 3 years. And so there is a sense in which some places are going to be more affected by this than others. But it's not just a function of the weather or flooding or fires. It's also the capacity to actually respond with resources, right? And so this is when we get into the fact that what's really going to happen is we're going to have situations where there are going to be places where the states might not be able to afford to step in and provide the resources they might need to if the FEMA assistance isn't there. And again, this spans different types. It's the immediate assistance, you know, getting people into shelters, first responders. That's under FEMA. So how are the states going to cover that? Maybe they can cover that part, right? But then, actually, the bulk of FEMA funding goes to the longer-term recovery efforts, rebuilding the schools, the bridges, the infrastructure that's needed to help that community survive and, you know, thrive and be able to generate the resources they need to recover. So if that federal aid isn't coming in, it's going to create real choices for folks. And as research has shown, it the impacts are going to vary not just by place, but by the social locations and the resources of individuals and different communities in those places.
As you said, the devil is in the details, but one detail that's been coming out is that requests for assistance, instead of going to FEMA, which will be phased out according to this plan, will go directly to the White House, and the president will decide who gets aid.
Yeah, it's just hard to imagine how that would work. I can understand the political motivations. If you have people coming to ask for help, maybe you're able to negotiate some sort of other return efforts, et cetera. But that just, at this point, seems somewhat inefficient and complicated. This is about, you know, the idea of taking FEMA into the Oval Office. It's already an agency that has thousands of employees. I'm not sure how that's going to become more efficient.
I want to give some specific examples, especially from your neck of the woods. We had Hurricane Harvey in 2017, then, of course, in Louisiana, Katrina. These are very big challenges for any community. I mean, and also the readiness of FEMA. How would that impact communities in the face of a really big hurricane like those two?
Right. And just to let you know, my background, I was actually a professor at Tulane University in New Orleans and was in the city when Katrina hit. So I've been in both of these. So it's one of those things that's informed me personally as well as professionally. But right, this is the question. When you have these storms of enormous scale and scope, by definition, you're going to need
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Diet help. It's like if something bad happens to your family, you have to reach out to your parents or to your cousins or your kids. The network is critical to those times of resilience. Nobody is going to be able to have the resources to withstand the worst of the worst case scenarios. So what happens in those cases, it's not that FEMA is perfect and it's not that corrections can't be made, but it is the case that those need to be thought out. It's sort of like thinking about you're waking up to something. The future is going to be a little bit more challenging. So you're working out and your workout routine is going, and then you sort of pull a muscle in your arm and you decide to chop it off. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you're trying to rebuild and become stronger for the future. So from my perspective, that's the real concern. And the research shows that, you know, if you don't come in and start to rebuild quickly, you can have situations where you have dislocation, displacement on massive scales. And that begins to disrupt local economies. And some of those economies are located in very strategic areas. In Houston, for instance, you know, the petrochemical infrastructure is vital to the nation's security, et cetera. So there are going to be those sorts of questions about what do we do and what does the state do if the federal money isn't forthcoming?
One wonders. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and so inevitably there are fixed resources, right? So the state is going to have to make decisions it wouldn't otherwise make, which might mean cutting back on affordable housing subsidies or cutting back on other infrastructural programs and basically setting itself on a course to go back and become more vulnerable in a sense to future storms rather than more resilient.
Since we're on the subject of storms, hurricanes effectively hit a lot more red states than they do blue. These are people who heavily supported the president and who now, we already have Kentucky and North Carolina looking for help and not getting it from the federal government. One wonders what the fallout will be when the other states realize that they may not get any help.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big question, and the one that sort of underlies what is this phase out likely to mean? Is it actually going to happen, or is it a basis for renegotiation? But what I would emphasize is that while it's tempting to think about sort of the idea that there might be some karmic justice, people who vote for a certain person or president and then his policies adversely affect someone, it should affect them. I'm not that sort of person to think that. We're all Americans. We're paying into a tax structure that pays up to the federal government. And increasingly, that federal government's there to serve and protect us. And one of the biggest threats we have are these growing climate challenges. So the thought that you would use people's money to provide less support to help them out of this situation seems backwards, regardless of how they vote.
You mentioned earlier that FEMA's not perfect, and just if you have an arm or a leg that doesn't work, you're not going to chop it off. What do you think the most significant challenges FEMA's facing in fulfilling its mission today?
Well, clearly rising up to the challenge of acknowledging the full set of risks that we face with our changing climate and some of the environmental risks. You know, this comes from the National Flood Insurance Program, where people are seeing their flood insurance rates and costs sort of double and potentially triple or quadruple over coming years. So that puts a real strain on Americans. So solving that question of how we socialize the risk and how do we build together as a nation to face some of these consequences is really key. And in that, one of the things that FEMA has done actually somewhat well in recent years and decades is two things. One is it used to be very reactive, right? You have a disaster, you have a big fire, you have a big flood, you have a big, you know, event, and it comes in and helps get you through the initial response and the recovery phase, but it would be reluctant to invest in the future. And so it has more programs that are beginning to experiment with that in terms of housing relocation out of the worst of the sort of risky zones or building more resilient infrastructure. So I think we need to move into that space a lot more and move forward and take advantage of those opportunities to really become a stronger and more secure nation.
Are you worried at all about us losing the economies of scale of having a federal government with all of its resources able to act quickly as opposed to, say, a small state? Let's just say Rhode Island got hit by some sort of disaster. They're not going to have the ability to move as fast and get as much as the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see this time and again in various points of research. So, for instance, wealthier places, counties, you know, Harris County, where I live in Houston or elsewhere, a lot of the funding that happens through FEMA is actually contingent upon having a staff of local experts to coordinate and sort of get the resources from the federal government. And a lot of smaller, less, you know, affluent cities and counties already running thin and so don't have that expertise, so they rely upon the federal government. So if you remove that, a lot of the infrastructure is not there. The state legislatures and the state governments, they have great people doing well-meaning work, but they are just not ready to begin to sort of step in that role and provide the resources because their budgets are constrained as well. So you're absolutely right. When we face these sort of challenges, we need all hands on deck, especially the strongest and the most available, and that's FEMA as we've done it. I will note that who knows, maybe there's a way in which FEMA emerges through some other structure. I'll just point out historically, FEMA has not been around forever, right? It was formed under Jimmy Carter in 1979 to basically pull together a lot of disparate agencies that were responsible for disaster in the federal government. So it sort of pulled them together and tried to coordinate. But the federal government has been helping with disaster relief since the early 1800s. So hopefully the federal government's commitment to doing that kind of work extends beyond FEMA. And the question is just how to make FEMA or whatever comes next better at the job that it's been doing for more than 200 years.
Are there any proposed alternate models? Should FEMA be eliminated or drastically reconfigured?
You know, this gets into a lot of moving parts. I think the National Advisory Council that the Congress, U.S. Congress, put together to help advise FEMA was an excellent source. So this is a wide-ranging, very diverse set of constituents and citizens and experts across the country who have been advising FEMA on how to improve their game and in the process help all of us across the country. I think the main thing is to basically empower that group and keep moving forward and innovating and thinking about how to do things in that space, not scrapping everything and starting from ground zero.
Another agency long in Trump's sights is the Department of Education. He's already won a victory with the Supreme Court in his quest to dismantle it. This Monday, the court allowed the Trump administration to move ahead with plans to carry out mass layoffs at the department. Those were previously blocked by a federal judge. Now the conservative majority court has granted an emergency application from the Trump administration that blocks that federal judge's ruling. President Trump praised the court's decision on Truth Social. Here's what he said. The United States Supreme Court has handed a major victory to parents and students across the country by declaring the Trump administration may proceed on returning the functions of the Department of Education back to the states. Here's more on these new Department of Education cuts with KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow in the Bay Area.
Mark, the actual court case here has not been decided, but the court says you can go ahead and fire these people in the meantime.
Right. He can't get rid of the department. So here's the issue, Eric. The Congress in 1979 passed a law which created the Department of Education. That's when Jimmy Carter was president. So it's an act of Congress, and no president can simply reverse an act of Congress. The president signed an executive order a few months ago shutting the Department of Education, saying that they were going to dismantle it. So that went to court, and he tried to fire a number of employees as a first step to doing that. The argument is, look, the Constitution says that Congress can make laws, and if the president signs them, he can't simply disobey them. Congress creates legislation, the president enforces it. What the president said is, it doesn't tell me how I carry out Congress's mission. So if I want to carry out Congress's mission by basically giving no money to the department and having no employees, I can do it that way. This is what went to court. And the first couple of courts agreed with educators who said the president does not have unilateral authority to do this. The Supreme Court said, okay, he can't get rid of the department, but it is the executive's decision about how you execute the law. And if he wants to get rid of about one third of the employees in the department, which is what the president's doing, he has the right to do that. So it won't cause irreparable harm, and they can't put a stop to stop him from doing that until this all plays out in court, and that'll take years. So meanwhile, you have about a third of the Department of Education, about 1,500 employees, who are out of work. They were fired a couple months ago. They were restored by a court. Now they're out of work again. And the big question now is, what does this mean for school districts? I mean, what happens when kids go to school in September? Most money for schools comes from local governments. So this isn't necessarily going to wipe out schools, but you know, places like California, San Francisco depend on millions and millions of dollars from the federal government in addition to local taxpayers. If that disappears or there are no employees to help carry out its mission, people are going to feel the changes.
And another question, what is the precedent set by this ruling regarding the presidential authority to reorganize or reduce the size of different federal agencies without congressional approval?
Yeah, Marty, I mean, what it means is it gives the president, once again, the court has given President Trump unprecedented authority. So it's not only Department of Education, it's departments like, USAID or all sorts of things, the Environmental Protection Agency. The president, because Congress created these agencies, can't simply say, as he's tried to do with the stroke of a pen, they're gone. But what he can say is, look, you want to clean the environment? We don't need tens of thousands of employees to do that. We just need a few thousand. It would essentially gut it. And in fact, you can see this statement put out by the Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, said just today or last night, the U.S. Department of Education will now deliver on its mandate to restore excellence in American education. That, whether you like what the Department of Education does or not, sounds a bit Orwellian, because what she's saying is by cutting a third of the employees and by gutting its budget, we are now able to restore its mission. And people are saying, okay, fine, where's the plan to restore the mission? So what is it you guys are going to do now? That hasn't come. This is clearly just another effort, and it's a good ideological debate. This is cutting the social safety net. Trump has said he wants to reduce taxes, he wants to cut bureaucracy, and he wants to reduce the social safety net. Reducing or gutting the Department of Education is a step towards doing that.
This comes out of the shadow docket of the Supreme Court, which means there's no public arguments for you to hear or anything like that. It's just, we ask for an emergency petition, and here's what the court says.
Yeah, so there will be, as Marty suggests, a future court action on this, you know, probably coming up next year because more people will sue. But Justice Sotomayor, who was dissented from this decision, said either the Supreme Court is, you know, blind to the effects of what this is going to mean for American school children if it thinks it will have no, you know, immediate and lasting effects, or it simply wants to give the president unprecedented power. She was very upset with this decision.
Others are upset, or sometimes elated, about what some are calling a major cull of the State Department workforce. That all depends on which side of the political aisle you sit on, and whether you, your friends, or your family are employed by the government. Margaret Brennan, CBS News foreign correspondent and moderator of Face the Nation, broke down this latest development for KCBS Radio in the Bay Area.
Rumors had been out there for a few days about this. Margaret, what do you think the effect is going to be?
Well, you know, this was all caught up at the Supreme Court level, whether this would proceed or not. The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, a former senator himself, was clear with Congress that he expects cuts of up to about 2,000 people. What we know is that emails are hitting inboxes for both civil servants and foreign service officers starting today, and that it will notify of what this is going to look like. The numbers we're seeing so far are closer to about 1,500 people, and no one at this point overseas, all U.S.-based. The Secretary of State argues this is a restructuring for efficiency. The unions representing these employees and, of course, other advocates are pushing back. We expect some protests outside the State Department around 5 p.m. Eastern time today.
How big a percentage does that number represent, and what do you think the impact will be on U.S. diplomacy and global influence?
Well, it all comes down to, you know, who gets cut where, right, and how central they are. That the question is, of course, how much taxpayers have invested in training these folks. And, you know, what if someone speaks four languages, but their department is downsized and America needs one of those languages, right? There are factors there that aren't so easy to just say, cut X percentage here. So, a lot of this is dependent on who the person is and their skill set, for example. The Secretary of State told Congress his plan was to have the heads of departments cut about 15% from each area. Now, here's what's different. The Secretary of State says he's got a plan. It's strategic. It's thought out. And he consulted the people who run the departments. Basically, he's saying, subtext, I'm not Elon Musk. These aren't just random cuts here and there and everywhere that we're going to have to roll back. So it doesn't appear that these are going to be possibly clawed back. These look like these are real job cuts.
But it sounds like you're inventing a less robust State Department that you intend to have less, you know, outward diplomacy.
Yeah. Well, and that's the hitch here, right? Is it really just about increasing efficiency at a time when you're also reducing funding to, you know, foreign aid is less than 1% of the budget? Is this really actually making us stronger at a time when the President of the United States says he wants diplomacy first? He wants peace deals everywhere. He doesn't want wars. Well, the people who prevent wars and the people who negotiate peace are the diplomats that the U.S. taxpayers send to foreign service training, and the civil servants who help to make all this happen. So that's where the question of, is this really going to pay off in the long term? Is this actually going to help America save money? You know, the former Secretary of Defense, back when he was a military officer, General Jim Mattis said, if you don't fully fund the State Department, you're going to have to buy me more ammunition. That's how important the U.S. military, said the diplomats, were here. And they are a fraction of the size of the Defense Department.
I want to shift gears here for just a moment and talk about crypto, where the momentum is high in Washington, and next week has been dubbed Crypto Week. What about the obstacles between the sector and its goals?
Well, interesting you should bring that up. I have French Hill. He is the Republican congressman from Arkansas who is the head of the Finance Committee in the House, and he is pushing, as we go into so-called Crypto Week, legislation on this front. As you know, the industry has called for, you know, what some would say is light touch regulation, rules of the road. Others would say necessary legislation, but we're going to talk to him about exactly what he's trying to get done during Crypto Week. And of course, you know, there are other questions here about what the president's own investment in this sector means.
I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thank you for listening to On Deadline. This show is produced by me and by Christy Strouser. Subscribe to On Deadline wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.